This is Paul McGann,
the Eighth Doctor. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Go and throw yourself under a bus.
I didn't mean to say that. He told me to say that.
I'm SP from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a show about the general Marvel comic universe, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other hilarious and fun geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You've dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Witten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Keir Hansen.
Arun, Arun, Arun.
And Hayley Malley.
Darth Vader, he's a villain, right?
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers, we do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry. If we look too far into the future, we'll give you a fair warning.
Welcome to episode 358 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we continue our torch. Wait, hold on. I've just been handed something. Oh, thank the Eye of Harmony. We finally got a look at a Series 12 trailer. Everybody scramble, get your extra slow motion playback button prepared, because we're going to scrutinize the heck out of this thing. I'm Haley.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Keir. This week, as Haley just mentioned, we interrupt our regularly scheduled rewatch blathering to blather about our 56th Doctor Who Day present, an official Series 12 trailer. Yay! Ever since that vacant, slowly spinning marketing chair over at BBC Television Center started filling up with disgruntled public feedback over the Watch This Space campaign, yeah, nice choice, guys, details about the casting and the production team, and now some actual visual evidence about the forthcoming season has been rolling out pretty steadily, you know, over the last 2 weeks, 10 days. It kind of makes one wonder if the valve was just sort of jammed shut for the past 8 months, and now they finally cracked it open, you know, like the proverbial fire hose. But hey, we got there!
Yay!
It used one of those special socket heads. They forgot where they put it. They couldn't open it.
Who put a star head on this thing? Nobody has a bit for that. Anyway, well.
They had to do one of those TV ads with the special, like, you know, fits any bolt thing.
I own one of those. It works fine. But all right, so I think total running time, despite what you might see on a YouTube clip or something like that, the total running for this time is roughly about a minute, you know, but there's a lot packed in. We joke about doing, you know, shot by shot analysis of this, but to a certain degree we kind of do shot by shot analysis of this thing, because there's a ton of interesting stuff to unpack. So where do you want to start?
How about the beginning?
And when you reach the end, stop.
So sequential. Well, we don't know. You see some commonality in some of the, obviously, the way they edited this together for action. And just off the top, I mean, this thing is more action-loaded than anything that we typically have been getting of late. Not even within this season, but just some of the stuff, like, think about the way some of the Series 12, Series 11 promo material came at you. It was more like, ooh, brooding and hinty and mysterious. This is just dun 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 dun, you know, full tilt almost start to finish. So what is the overall impression that you get of it?
I mean, I get the impression it's new Doctor Who. I could care less. Yay, we get content.
I think it looks more like traditional Doctor Who than last season did.
That's true.
I get that. Yeah. Yeah. So what are some of the key points that sort of drive that?
Yeah, it's definitely got the pacing seems more in line with what we're kind of used to, you know, a lot more of the action kind of thing, bigger space, like set pieces, things like that. The you know, the scary monster banging up against the glass for, you know, half a frame. It's mm-hmm. Yeah, these are things that just kind of seem to be missing. I mean, obviously the Jadoon, the Cybermen kind of being there, kind of those really help.
Right.
Yeah. You know, giant scorpion monster busting through the streets. Yeah.
Okay. So hitting some of the things that I want to take apart a little further, because I did, for the sake of our analysis, you know, we screen captured a few things so that we can use them as a kind of a visual guide as we go chronologically through this. We don't know what order we're going to be getting any of the episodes to come, and we don't know any of the synopses of them to be able to infer whether we're going to get, you know, historical pieces before the space adventure pieces, before the, you know, immediate near future Earth pieces or what have you. But we do start off with them outrageously well-dressed in what looks like, you know, some sort of a possibly, you know, California or even a, well, based on the sort of the color of the soils, I wouldn't say it was like a Tuscan vineyard. But yeah, looking dapper AF in their tuxes. And Yaz with this amazing kind of sequined wrap coat thing. So everybody looking fantastic, right? So yeah. So there we go. We're off to a good start. They're all looking like they're ready to start a year's worth of solid adventures here. And then we go into space danger immediately.
Yay! My favorite kind.
Okay. Now, Jay, you mentioned the thing thumping up against the glass, which comes in at about like second six on this thing. You know, security of this entire planet is at stake, which is a very common thread for us here over the past 56 years. But the thing that jumped up there, and I grabbed a quick screen cap of it. So take a look at that for a second and tell me if that doesn't look like something. If you were to take a Sycorax and strip off all of its, you know, the how it wears the bone armor on the exterior of itself, that's just a general impression I get from the tone of the skin to the shape of the skull to the just general ickiness all about it. I have to wonder.
No? I'm kind of wondering if this might be the terrifying new monster that, that Bradley Walsh was talking about.
Very true. We see a couple, as you said, a couple familiar and a couple unfamiliar monsters over the course of this thing, and a couple that you can't even make out what the heck they are because they're constantly in a state of glow. One thing we do recognize is the face of the gentleman to follow in the trailer as they're being told that they're asked if they can be relied upon in this 40s kind of espionage setting, Stephen Fry. So glad to see him here. And I'm glad they're not making him some sort of over-the-top character, like he's not supposed to be a supervillain or something like that, or some sort of space villain. They have him playing a more Earth-based kind of character so that he can just shine the way he wants to. But the thing I gotta wonder is the next little sequence here, where the Doctor's, you know, apparently tucked into the floorboards. So I have a question about the tuxedo she's wearing. She's in a bow tie and coat again.
Right.
Does not look like the same one as the gray coat that looked very Matt Smithy, you know, very 11th Doctor that she had back in the vineyard scenes. If you see,
yeah, this looks more formal.
Well, it could be the same one, and just the lighting, because she's hiding under the floorboards, make it different.
Well, so here's my question then. So we could tell from the early shots that they were all wearing modern garb, right? And we'll find out moments later when we see another scene cut from that same sequence in that same vineyard, and they're being shot at by a very, very modern present-day gun from a very modern present-day car. But I'm looking at her sidekick in this scene, actor whom I don't recognize, and I don't believe has been credited yet, as far as I know. Can you tell what if that's like period garb or anything on that? Because I know there were some set photos and set reports that Jodie was dressed at one point in Victorian doctors, like medical doctors' garb. So I'm wondering if that might be this tuxedo, because the coat, the shirt buttons and that style looks a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if this might be from that period piece. I don't know. But I don't know if a bow tie would be appropriate for that period. So I'm very confused at this point. Hiding under floorboards.
Well, the Doctor always just wears whatever he or she would like. So periods don't matter as much for the Doctor's costume as they do for the companion.
Yeah, which is why I'm trying to base any sort of assessment off of whoever it is that's lying next to her in the adjacent set of floorboard space. And what the hell that plan is. I don't know.
Well, and I had originally watched this on my phone screen, and I had just seen that as Yaz until I saw this much larger image, and it's clearly not.
Oh, see, I was looking at it, and for half a moment, I thought that it was Maisie Williams. I was like, are we getting Lady Me back?
Yeah, so that's the great part about these smash cut edits, is that you can look at them either still or in motion and get 10 different ideas of what the heck you're looking at. Then we see our Jujun. Jujun are back. And then there's a face.
Mm-hmm.
It's a creepy face. It's a face that needs some dental work.
And it's a face that looks kind of familiar.
And that's what I want to know. So the two of you kind of take a look at that thing and note that it is primarily really ebony-skinned horns, really creepy brow thing that might be even thorns coming out of the forehead or something. But when I saw this go by briefly on the first couple of watches, I immediately went to...
The Rechnos. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I don't know. The more I stare at this, I don't know. Because... the Rakdos Queen was red, right?
Right.
And had...
People can be different colors, Kier. Gosh.
No, but it's the eyes. So unless we're doing a whole change of the Silurians thing where these ones have two eyes and these ones have three eyes, then there's eyes missing from this one. And I don't remember if the Rakdos Queen had any whites in her eyes or whether it was all black. Like full demon eyes.
The Rakdos was the one in The Runaway Bride, right?
Yes.
Yes.
She did have white sewer eyes.
It's been a long time since I saw that. I can't remember.
Yeah. She had like contacts that blacked out the irises, but there was white around them.
Okay. Because it definitely kind of looks like her teeth a bit, and maybe some of the general head structure, but you can't see up the skull to see whether or not there may be a couple extra rows of those arachnid eyes.
Yeah, it's... So. I mean, if it is a Rakdos, I'm thinking like, you know, relative or, you know, some kind of like, you know, a spinoff of the species or something along those lines. I don't, but that was the initial reaction I had too when I saw it, was it looked very much like a Rakdos.
Okay. Something, or at least someone that I'm far more certain about, and I'm going to plant the flag in this hill here. I'm willing to die on it. Is that, as you will hear about, as we'll reference really briefly in the news a little later, we've got some additional casting announcements that have been made, and one of them being Goran Višnjić, Croatian actor whom I know he's been working straight through, but I really knew of him was his role on ER way back in the day as this.
He just did Timeless, another time travel show.
Okay. I'm not really familiar with Timeless, so he wasn't sort of top of mind for me. But a fellow Croatian, whom he seems to be, according to some interviews, be very, very enamored with, and is
his favorite historical figure?
Yeah, a big, big fan. Nikola Tesla, which would make so much sense, and you gotta wonder why the only time Tesla has ever been used... within the Hooniverse is in a Big Finish audio once, which is a travesty.
Right.
So. I love Nikola Tesla. I love every time he shows up in like sci-fi stuff.
But the thing that I gotta wonder, because I'm just taking it as written that that's who it is, right? So now the really big question is, because I've read some of the biographies and seen, you know, biodramas, pieces about him and whatnot. And it's a matter of when in his life this falls. You know, is this when he was dealing with Westinghouse or what have you, trying to get his transformer built I can't remember the name of the town in Long Island, where he was being hired by JP Morgan, I think, to create wireless message transfer, right? Transatlantic message transfer. I think that was like 1890 or something like that. My dates are horrible on it, but it was the project that financially broke him, because obviously he was beaten by Monroney to the market as far as getting a telegraph out or wireless telegraph out there, and they pulled the plug on his project. Coming to find out that he had bigger plans to build a tower that could send images and audio and everything. He was basically trying to build the first wireless internet. and had this massive tower and couldn't finish the project. And it not only financially broke him, it emotionally and, dare say, mentally broke him. And it was the beginning of his decline. So if based on kind of the period material, based on the fact that he looks like he's, you know, as the age they're casting him, so forth, if he's in his 30s or so, that sets it in a particular bracket, 30s, 40s. And then if it has anything to do with the immediate scenes that follow, where you see these scorpion creatures chasing Yaz and somebody else behind her through these market streets, no vehicles. Okay, so we're pre, you know, Model T, Model A, you know, streets still horse and carriage. This could be, you know, turn of the century here. That says a lot, but I am all in. This is going to be my historical piece for the season, hands down.
Well, and that's kind of what was making me think, like confirming my whole thing about thinking it's part of the Arachnos, is, I mean, you have an arachnid-style creature coming around there, so it's like it could be a subspecies or something like that, or it's I'm thinking that this one has to, like, the four different shots that we've got in our sheet here are probably all from the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, based on their sort of the palette and the tone, like the way that they kind of visually present.
Yeah.
Here's a thought, because, you know, we've been talking about the fact that Chibnall feels safer this season, and we'll get to some of the things that they've been discussing about the working on Series 12 as opposed to Series 11 that comes up in the news later. But we've been kind of discussing the fact that Chibnall might feel at this point, okay, I've introduced the existing fans to the way that I want to approach these stories. You know, hit or miss, whatever people feel of it, that's fine. But I did part of it because of the fact that I knew that a lot of new people were going to be coming into the fold, and I didn't want to throw them by giving them a lot of name checks or visual references or anything that was going to make them think, I can't digest this show because I didn't come into it from the beginning. So every episode was sort of, you know, whatever, written so that you could just sort of sit down and drop and say, what are you watching? Mm-hmm. Oh, Doctor Who. Oh, I've never seen it. Let me see what it's all about. And you'll be okay, right? So now if he's going to start tapping into, some existing, adversaries or partners or acquaintances or anything of that sort that extends the universe a bit, maybe do it with a little spin, which is exactly what I think you're tapping into here, Jay. Mm-hmm. If it's not the Arachnos, it's not the arachnid variation that we saw. Maybe this is the scorpion, I don't know, derivative or something, or I don't know, or maybe because this is a different time period, maybe this later evolved into, you know, the Arachnos queen that we met, or empress that we meet later. Yeah, I can take that. But damn, that thing looks beastly.
Yeah, no, it's that. Honestly, the first time I watched this through, the real quick thing, like that thing busting through the corridor and like taking out a stall, I was kind of like, all right, that's what Bradley Walsh was talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that thing scares the crap out of me.
Uh-huh. And this is the kind of stuff that D-Neg, as the effects team, excels at.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody had said, I saw, I think it was some comment threads on the initial BBC YouTube post, was that if you slow it down to quarter speed, you know, like we do, there are other ones clinging to the walls of the street. So this apparently is just the only one that's going after them. So apparently it's like some sort of either an invasion or a horde or something like that. So yay, you got that going for you.
Infestation.
One wasn't enough.
Right. Hints of some comedy, right? Mm-hmm. Got the doctor asking for her space fam's trust and Cram asking whether or not that has to be answered genuinely, but he's got some contraption on his head, which apparently is not a crystal from Metabilis 3. But what I just want to know, what just throw your potshot theory out there. What could they possibly be trying to get out of Graham's head with him wearing this DIY Dalek helmet or whatever he's got on?
I mean, does the shape of it not remind you of maybe like what the innards of a Cyberman helmet would be?
Oh, I'm wondering about back in the day when when they would take the captured humans and would put the cyber helmets on them to make their basically their zombies, right? They'd want their human. Similar, yeah. It's just missing the closure of the top antenna, so to speak. But that that light, I don't understand the point of the light. But well, I guess we're gonna find out. Either that or
I don't know. It's some sort of like sensor or antenna or something. But like the top of the Cyberman helmet has something that would come down in about that shape as well.
Well, we will get to that momentarily. We had mentioned that we were gonna see. Sir Lenny in this one, as part of the casting announcement that had been made about Stephen Fry. Apparently Sir Lenny is going to play a baddie. He genuinely doesn't, although if you did see him in Chef, he has an acidic side where he's basically kind of channeling his head chef nastiness. But he's got a pretty large gun in his hand, and is in that same vineyard referred to earlier. So,
Well, I mean, he could be just really happy to be helping the doctor. We don't know.
They could be in the car, and he could just be celebrating, you know, in a very Texan way, shooting his guns in the air.
Exactly.
That's what you do, right, Jay?
That's what you all do? I mean, that sounds like a Tuesday to me.
Okay, got it. Although I believe, if I remember correctly, there was also a sequence that was cut where you were like doing this overhead, looking down on the vineyard rows, and they were there were motorcycles chasing through, I think, as well. So this is going to be a huge chase sequence, which is great to see because that always adds to the amping things up. But then they jump to something where we're going to have another very specific historical moment, and I think this is going to be really poignant. And I think it's going to, I think it's going to lead to a bit more of a reveal about potential other historical characters that we have yet to tap into. And someone asks where we are, and they get a response that they're in Paris, 1943, and you get a shot of the Eiffel Tower surrounded in smoke with Paris ablaze. So we're in the thick of Nazi occupation at this point, and the bombing raids and things. So that's, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, based on which writer they hand it to, and exactly what tangent they're taking off the sides of these historical events, because obviously they don't address them directly, because otherwise they would have solved everything, but they didn't do that. Fixed point in time, so to speak. I want to see what story's going on here. And then we get to a really interesting sequence. Jay, can you kind of tell me what's our next little 10 seconds of whoa?
Everything kind of pauses for a moment, slows down a little bit, and you have the doctor sitting there having, I don't know if it's an introspective moment or just like a realization kind of thing, but you know, she says, something's coming for me. I can feel it. And it's just...
Never heard that before on the show.
Yeah. You get a quick shot of a Cyberman coming out through some flames and then you've got all of her space fam saying, you know, it's like, bring it on. We can take it. And then,
Hitting the family beat again.
Right.
We've been staring at that Cyberman for a couple of days now. There's some familiar, obviously some familiar aspects to it and some unfamiliar details to it. So great to see that they've decided that it's time, that they're safe to be able to bring this back into, current canon. But, looks to be the most modern iteration of our Cybermen, right? Our post Nightmare in Silver, I would hope. I think, based on, you know, whatever helmet shape and whatnot, but horribly distressed.
Yeah.
And so far we only see one, right?
Yeah.
Theories?
Come on. I mean, I can come up with all kinds of crazy.
First one off the top of your head. In fact, Jay, you mull it over for a second. Haley, top of your head, go.
There's eloquent one, as always.
Okay.
One rusty, broke arse Cyberman coming up out of the flames.
You think it is?
What's
his face?
No, I don't. I'm not implying anything. I'm not. I have no skin in this game. I'm just wondering.
All right. Well,
why.
I mean, we see seconds before that we see Paris on fire, and then there's obviously flame all around this. That doesn't necessarily mean anything,
right?
But he could also be in Paris.
Could be something unearthed. Yeah. I'm also wondering if, because of the fact that it comes up during the something's coming for me discussion, that that means that either they're implying an arc of some sort that's going to last a couple of episodes, which I think could be something that Chibnall would mesh very well with, because you think about how powerful some of his series work historically when he has more than one story to be able to plant things in your head and mess with you a bit. That's a strong suit of his. But but there's only one of them. It's, you know, this is no invasion. It just gives me the impression that something has been dug up, brought up, unearthed. He's hurting. I mean, panels missing from across the helmet and whatnot. I don't know. I will admit that I lose track of the some of the seeds that we've put out there for this edition of the Cybermen meant that it came from this version of the storyline from this universe, and which ones were on the other side of the divide, and these were the ones from Mondas and so forth. That gets a little fuzzy, I'll admit. But I just want to know how Chibnall or whoever he hands the reins to on this particular piece of the story, how they're going to bring this in to the viewer's understanding. Are they going to handle it in some sort of a really offbeat way, the way they did with the Dalek and Resolution, which was clever.
Yeah.
But no, really that was unexpected.
I don't know. I mean, I would love to see something where it is just, you know, maybe this is just a remnant from some, you know, like, what if this were the one Cyberman that, like, remained from, you know, Age of Steel or something like that? Like, we're actually on Earth, and this thing just, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, crap, Cyberman, and it's spent, like, the past 10 years upgrading itself or whatever, and so we just get, like, that one uber-powerful Cyberman.
Mm-hmm.
There's like this one thing that's black in the side of that frame, and I'm trying to figure out what it is based on this one fuzzy image.
Looks like a mailbox.
I couldn't tell if it was
on mailbox. Oh, okay.
It's on like a tripod though, so I don't know if that's some sort of.
Yeah, it almost looks like a camera.
A camera or a gun turret, or, you know, you can't really tell. So, you know, even if you watch it motion, which I did really slowly, I still couldn't figure out because it had about a quarter of a second up on the screen.
You're right.
But all right, so after they go through the, you know, we're in your corner, we're your space fam, kind of reassuring, and then the action starts to ramp back up again after that quiet little moment of danger, of suspenseful danger, we see these glowing beasts with, like, or glowing beasts, creatures, I don't know, I'm going to call them energy ghosts for lack of a better term at the moment, that have these funky head shapes and antennas off the top that look like, I can't make out what they are. You get a slightly different angle of them at a moment where the companions ask the doctor, I didn't think that anything could get into the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
She responds, I didn't either, you know, or neither did I. But the thing coming through the door is one of them. The helmet shape.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
So what is it? If it's pure energy. Right? Does that have something to do with the fact that it can phase shift?
Yeah, I was going to say it's, and the fact that we had six of them means that this one coming through the door is probably not a good thing.
Yeah, the first of many.
Right.
And if they're having this dialogue, this exchange, which has probably been, the audio has probably been pulled from a later scene in it, means they're already in and they're somehow hiding. I didn't think they could get in. Yeah, I didn't either. But they're here, and they're in, and we're in a closet. So now what?
Panic!
The thing that threw me on the editing on that little sequence there was that it did a strange cut to these other two figures shooting these crazy, I don't know what they are, guns?
I mean, they look like proton packs.
Yeah, because they're shooting like not a direct beam.
So that made me think they're like two sides in some sort of conflict.
Interesting. Yeah, fight an energy beast with some sort of an adverse energy pulse of some kind. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not exactly dressed for armor. They're just wearing rubber suits and face masks, gas masks.
Like they're trying to keep something out.
Yeah, like they're trying not to be a conductor of pure energy.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And then we get a very dissonant kind of sequence here. There was a moment that we didn't mention where there's like bats crashing through the ceiling of what looked like maybe a research lab or something of that sort. Mm-hmm. But we cut to another moment where there's a flood of these bats that are either flying around or somehow trying to pelt the TARDIS on a beach.
Yeah.
Odd setting, but we'll let it go. And then we get a little punch in the feels where all of our space fam are looking very, very distraught.
Right.
And in tears.
Yeah. I mean, we've been told repeatedly that this is going to be a darker series, that it's going to, you know, it's going to go for these kind of things where it's got stuff to deal with. So this just kind of confirms that and says, okay, there are stakes. Things are going to happen. It's not going to be, you know, things are not going to wrap up neatly by the end of the episode. Yeah. Right. I mean, even in the last series, when we had, you know, like the ones that stand out to me are Rosa and Demons of the Punjab, where, I mean, you still had very poignant, like emotional scenes, but the fact that we know that there's going to be more of an arc in this one, the fact that we've been told it's going to be darker, lends this a little bit more weight, I think.
Right. And I'm hoping that with everything, if this is signs that they're going to be amplifying the energy and the drama and the stakes and the risks and so forth, and really kind of bring it into the, okay, we established in the baseline, we introduced you to the characters, we gave you some of their poignancy, we gave them, you know, some reason why they're in this 100%. Now we're off on the adventures, come hell or high water. One of the things that I hope that they maintain, and I actually was just having this conversation over the weekend with a couple of other Whovians, including Lee from Pixel Who, and she was talking about the fact that grief, particularly, was a predominant theme. Grief and loss was a predominant theme through Series 11, right? Mm-hmm. And how that it doesn't clean up neatly. In real life, or even if you give it a period of time, this, you know, the whole premise of time heals all wounds is not entirely accurate. You just find ways to be able to incorporate it, live with it. You never really fully move beyond it, and that applies to a lot of aspects of most of our characters here. I'm hoping that persists to a certain degree. Not that I want them to be gloomy and morose through the entire year. But there has to be, there's some grounding in the reality of the fact that things still sting, and they still have moments where they catch themselves and they're like, "Are you doing all right?" "Yeah, I just, you know, something happened. It made me think of Graham, or, you know, or it made me think of my family back home in Yaz's case. Mm-hmm. Makes me miss my sister or whatever it is, you know."
Right.
I hope that sticks around. It needs the heart, even if we're going to be spending a lot of our time running like hell.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I do want them to have, I want there to be more character development this year, and not just for, not just the relationship between Ryan and Graham.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of why I hope they don't hammer on the loss of Grace again too much this season, because I think that was, and I said it before, to the detriment of the other characters, because not everyone had a relationship with Grace.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I do think that by the end of the last year, like, they're still grieving. They're still, but they had reached a point where, you know, it's like, okay, they're like, I mean, we had the whole episode of Graham dealing with the loss and things like that. And it's, I feel like they reached a point where it's not going to be it shouldn't be a staple for these characters anymore. Like, we don't have to check in on how they're feeling about Grace every episode anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there are still some things that they queued up last season that they have yet to resolve. Well, depending on whether or not they were actually giving us something to chew on, or whether it was a red herring, I'm not really sure. But wasn't there the child that they kept referring to? Wasn't there a reference to, I can't remember the way they actually phrased it. Was it the, It wasn't the impossible child, because they wouldn't dare use the word impossible. It was like the timeless child or something of that sort. And everyone thought, are they talking about Susan? You know. I don't know whether that was really anything, whether that was an avenue they were really planning on chasing. But there's no hint of it here, as far as I can tell.
There was also in the episode on the medical spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
The guy had said something to the doctor that could have kind of been construed as like there's something up with her medically, mm-hmm. and then it was just wasn't mentioned again.
Oh yeah, okay. They could have just brushed that off really quickly as being something where, you know, the doctor's physiology as a Time Lord didn't quite
a Time Lord.
Yeah, but that's yeah. That's got all the subtext to it that you could run wild with. I forgot about that. Saranga conundrum. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, all I know for sure is that we have, I mean, this looks like it's going to be a you know, quite action-packed series, and it's, I don't know. I'm super excited about it. They did a fantastic job. As much as I wish we hadn't had to wait this long to get something, what they gave us was worthwhile.
Yeah. It gives you hope.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And rebellions are built on hope. So there you go.
The trailer starts with them all fancy dressed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we've got the rumor from the Mirror that, was it the Mirror or the Daily Mail, that the season's starting for New Year's?
Mm-hmm.
On New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if like maybe the series starts with them going to a New Year's party. And then that's why we got so much of them in the fancy dress, is it's that two-part season opener. So it's early material, and there's 2 hours of it. So that's why we're getting a lot from that.
That's interesting. They did, I think it was confirmed from the BBC that they were going to at least provide the New Year's special. What I think is still a little nebulous is whether or not they're going to put the needle right back down on the record on the 4th of January or what have you, just to resume episode 2. I think that's still a little unclear. Like, everybody's talking about it as if written, but I don't think there was ever any official word from BBC press releases.
No, none at all.
Okay, so, you know, take that as what you will. What is for certain, though, is other stuff that we have in the
news.
News. Couple pieces. One we tipped off to, and we kind of quickly checked both. So, which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's talk about the guest lineup that we've got. So we talked about a few of these people that appeared in the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you saw Stephen Fry. You knew that he was going to be there, and we had heard that that Sir Lenny Henry was going to be there. Obviously coming over from Broadchurch, so you know, it was kind of familiar territory. Chibnall loves to cannibalize from within his own cast characters and the people that he enjoys. But we added to it two additional actors who you may or may not be familiar with. We quickly referenced Goran Vishnish. I know him from ER as Croatian Dr. Sexy there. I think his whole big thing back then was that he never got any sleep, and yet he never looked tired. He kept talking about the fact that he had never been sleeping because he was always on 18-hour shifts, but he always looked fantastic. And Robert Glinster, who I'm not as familiar with.
So, Robert, you should be.
I should?
Yes, because he was actually in Doctor Who previously.
As?
I cannot remember the character's name, but he was in the Caves of Androzani.
Oh, he must have been a baby at the time.
He was, and he there was a story I found talking about it where he is talking about how he was 24 when he was in the show the first time, and now is returning to it at the ripe old age of 60. So, to tie it in even further, was actually in the TV show Hustle with Mark Warren or. Elton, Love and Monsters.
Love and Monsters?
Yes, oh. Elton Pope. That's what it was.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so, I mean, just Doctor Who all over this guy, so.
Well also because of the fact that BBC only has 12 actors. So there you go.
Yes, yeah, but.
Works out perfectly. Cool. Well, that's now a total of 4 confirmed names of guest stars. We still have one guest actor that I'm waiting to find out, and that is whoever it was that was buried under the floorboards with the doctor in that trailer sequence, because that's going to help me understand quite a bit. She just doesn't look that familiar, and I just got to place it. There's not enough screen time for me to figure that out.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, so that's more to look forward to, and I have a feeling based on the pace that they're doing this now that they have started putting trailer material out there, I will bet that they will start continuing this trend of guest star announcements, either directly or indirectly, so that you might just see things starting to be confirmed on IMDb and see people added to their CVs, because it's safe to say, okay, yes, I am involved in episode 7 or something of that sort, whether their character is named or not. I just want to know who's working on it, because it's always cool to see how all the threads connect. But yeah, so the other thing that we've got is, as we mentioned, was the kind of the discussion about how they're approaching this this series a little differently, or maybe have to approach the series a little differently because of different expectations and different demands. What's the story on this one?
Well, I mean, this is just basically them talking about how, if you know, there's always a lot of stress on shows going into the second series. And, you know, like, everybody has had their share of stress where, you know, Christopher Eccleston was, you know, carrying the reboot on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know, David Tennant was the first big regeneration of the new era. You know, right. Matt Smith was too young and Peter Capaldi was too old. And there's, you know, all of them have had their share of criticisms coming from the fan base. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, obviously Jodie coming in as the first female doctor is probably one of the biggest shakeups that you know, that the show has done in its new form. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are like, oh, well, you got through the first series, you're great. And everybody that's involved is like, no, you have not been paying attention. Like, this is more ambitious. This is more, you know, there's a lot more writing on it now because they've established things. Like, people have expectations. So it's a lot of strain on them, and they're all admitting to just how much pressure they're under with this one.
Right. I think going along with the pressure, I'm glad to hear from Chibnall, who doesn't really like to speak on the record too often, you know, so the fact that they gave this sort of extended interview to the Metro of all people was a nice sign. But him saying kind of what we were hoping that we would hear from him, that approaching the second year for this cast, crew, and this team means that they have the opportunity to take the viewers on a different type of journey this time around, is exactly what I think. I believe that the three of us were kind of hoping to hear that. Okay, I've introduced you to the world. There's a lot of aspects of it that you're really going to love. There's going to be some things you're going to be slightly unfamiliar with, but here in the first, our first season, series 11, we're not going to throw too much at you at once, because we want you to get to know these individuals and the adventures that are within their scope. Now we're going to, you know, wrap a few more layers around that and see if the viewers can come along with it, which I think serves two purposes. It helps the newer viewers to be able to start to, you know, dip their toes into deeper waters, but it also means that the seasoned or the veteran viewers who have been waiting to say, God, why are they spending so much time on this? And where's this? Where's that? Where's all my familiar stuff? Where's my psychic paper? Where's my, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Can finally get those things back in to say, all right, you know, thanks for sticking it out. We had to go help the newbies for a second, but we're back into it full swing now. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. That's kind of all we were hoping for, is like, okay, let's get back in. Last season was fun, and you know, we got some really high quality gems out of it too, but it didn't feel like Doctor Who like we were used to. There was a lot of changes that happened last series, and so this is kind of like, okay, we're swinging back into the main flow of what we're kind of used to. So it is exciting, because now it's a lot of the not overly petulant fans can stop their complaining.
Right. It's more familiar in content, but it has that higher degree of polish now that this new team and using, you know, D-Negative as their effects squad and whatnot, Akinola's scores and things, everything has this really high production value, extremely high production value, which, you think about where we came from, like when we jump around our classic rewatches and stuff, and we're saying, you know what, I'll give credit to this episode because I can't even see the seams between the flats. Or,
yep. I mean, look how nice those tuxes are in this one, though, guys.
Right. You know, if that's the kind of stuff that we can say is, you know, I don't know, Graham's bow tie was crooked in that scene. and that's the best we can do? I mean, the Jadoon now back with like full facial expressions and whatnot. And so it's a matter of now saying, we wanted to show you how sharp we can make this, because we want wow factor on that regard. And now we want to give you the reassurance that not only is it going to look good, it's going to sound and feel and rest with you to the good after it's all said and done too. So I got really, really high hopes for this.
Yeah, no, it is an exciting time to be a Whovian, finally.
So I have one question for the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just the first trailer, and you know that we're going to get, and obviously, you know, the big candy bowl was unwrapped because it was Doctor Who Day, right? 56th anniversary of the launch of the show. But I would imagine that we are going to get at least one more trailer. Maybe it's just focused on what the New Year's Day special is going to be, or maybe it's going to be, you know, the second installment of a series kind of sizzle reel thing. What's the next big surprise, unannounced surprise that you think is going to be dropped in?
The return of a previous companion or something along those lines, or another classic villain that we haven't seen in a while.
Okay.
I'm going to say that it's probably going to end up being the big bad.
Oh, so like as far as a guest star or as far as bringing a classic just monster back?
Allowing us to know who the big bad, who is coming after the Doctor.
Oh, okay. So you're thinking that even though they edited that episode or that trailer so that it, like, in the middle of that, something's coming for me and I can feel it, and they give the shot of the Cybermen, you think that was a red herring and it's actually
possibly
cut from two different...
Possibly, or it could just be, I'm not saying that they're going to be like, oh no, let's absolutely like let you know who the big bad guy is, but there's going to be that, like, you know, the screen goes dark and all of a sudden you see like a face come up and like, it's like, okay, this person is sinister. And what it might be the Cyberman, but it's going to be that villain reveal.
Andrew Scott.
Exactly.
That's all I want. Moriarty in the TARDIS. Or he could be Hot Priest in the TARDIS. It doesn't matter. Whatever character he wants to play. Just give me Andrew Scott.
Or maybe one more big guest star reveal.
You said Andrew Scott, and my brain went to Adam Scott. And I was like, why is Trevor going to be the bad guy in Doctor Who? That's not...
He's just like a little sarcastic and whiny.
Nice. All right. Cool.
All right. Well, next week we're actually going to get back to our Torchwood rewatch now, unless the BBC decides, hey, more content. But we'll be going back into Series 1, Episode 9, Random Shoes.
Yeah, so apologies to Captain Jack. We know restraint is not one of his strong suits, but we're going to have to ask him to wait one more week if he can.
All right. Well, this has been episode 358 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, okay, now I'm going to watch the trailer in reverse at 1/8 speed while listening to a different album every time.
Ooh.
See what I can unlock this way.
And this is Kira saying, you just wait second week of December when they drop the next trailer and you see the return of Syl.
And this is Haley saying, was I watching the right space?
We'll see you guys next week.
LLC.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio. Is copyright 2020. 2019. And on three. See you next week.